311.
Good afternoon and welcome to the 311 radio show. I'm your host, Senior Fire and Life Safety Officer, Andrew Taylor. Happy to have you all here with us once again, another Sunday. I hope everyone enjoyed their Easter, long Easter weekend. Hope it was filled with a lot of rest and relaxation. And of course, knowing Beijing, some picnics and some food. So I definitely hope that everyone had a very good Easter holiday. So today I have with me that special guest I have been promising you all for a long time. No pressure on him, but you know, I told you that I was going to bring an expert to speak to you about certain things. And I have him here with me today, Dr. Kirk Douglas, the director for the Center for Biosecurity Studies at the University of the West Indies, Cape Hill campus. You see all that? That even all that title alone, you know already that he's the expert in this area. So good afternoon, Dr. Douglas.
Hi, good afternoon, Officer Taylor. Thank you for your very kind invitation to this really important program. I really want to applaud the Barbados Fire Service for this outreach that they have every Sunday to the community. I think this is very vital and very important. And good afternoon to all our Barbados as well.
Yes, thank you very much. I know that you're a very busy man and you know, your time is very important. So we also appreciate you taking the time out to be here with us this afternoon. So we're going to get straight into it. As we always know, how my 30 minutes tends to flare a little faster every Sunday. I have the show to host. So tell us, what is biosecurity?
Well, that is a question that I know a lot of people may have on their mind, but I assure you, reassure all of Barbados, you practice biosecurity, every one of you. I'll give you a very, very, very clear example. Mm-hmm. You have windows and doors to your home. Your windows and doors are part of what you will consider your border security. You try to keep out certain unwanted elements, wind, rain, sun, because you have also curtains as well, but also pests and pathogens. You don't want to have mice. You don't want to have roaches. You don't even want to have lizards. Some people don't want to have those in their home, right? Because obviously the intention there is to reduce the risk to you as a person and also the people that live within. So think of the home as an ecosystem. It's just where people live, where people spend their time. Our organisms spend their time, living organisms. No, look at the situation where you have the country, the windows and doors to the country are really the ports of entry. Yeah. So the government then dictates and sets the policy of who could come into the country and who cannot come into the country. They have to abide by certain regulations. And I tell people, you also have policies. And even within the Caribbean region, if outside is raining, my shoes are muddy, and you invite me into your home for a glass of drink or maybe something, glass of water, maybe something a bit stronger because, you know, people might want something to warm their blood, then you expect me to do something when I come through the door. And I always pause and ask them what that is. And they always tell me, well, take off your shoes, right? And that is exactly what biosecurity is, a system of management practices to reduce risk. So you practice biosecurity in your home, just like everybody else. You have policies that you have. They may not be written, but you do have them and people understand them and you want people to respect them. So that is really what I would say in a nutshell, what biosecurity is in a real practical way.
Okay. So I guess the follow-up then will be, why then is biosecurity so important to us?
Well, biosecurity is very important because you want to essentially preserve lives. So both the health of you, your loved ones, but also your livelihoods, because it could also be threatening your job or your job security. And so at the end of it, that's what we really care a lot about. And so where biosecurity comes into the whole equation is to understand the interrelatedness, the linkages between your actions and then the outcomes you're seeing, and then how to reduce that risk, the negative impact. So with biosecurity, there are three main factors that govern biosecurity. The infrastructure, so like in the case of your home, are your windows sound? Is your door lock working? Is it something that someone can easily jig and then get into your house? you would not want that. You would not sleep well at night. And in the same way, you want to make sure that your infrastructure, this could be a building, this could be whether even your water infrastructure, you want to make sure that that is also sound. And then you want to ensure the environment. So your climate, you have to pay attention to it. Is it hot? Is it rainy? Is it dusty? Like with the Sahara dust, all of these things you have to pay attention to. And then finally, it's the human element. So the human risk, how and what we do, that is what exposes us to more risk. And that's the only thing that we really have that we could really change on a real broad basis. And that is why, like, for instance, this particular program, being able to communicate with society, with the community, to get the word across that these are bad behaviors or these are really good behaviors that you should continue to practice. Yes. It's very, very important.
Okay. So I know we had a conversation a bit earlier and you mentioned there's a difference between biosecurity and biodiversity. You know, you said something, people can interchange the two words. So can you give us a difference between biosecurity and biodiversity so we don't get confused again?
no problem. And it's in the spelling. I think people see biodiversity or hear the word biodiversity and say, oh, that's biosecurity. So biosecurity, like I mentioned, is a way of practicing risk management against bio risk. So it's bio risk management. Whereas biodiversity is really about the wide range of living organisms that you have in a particular geographic location. Let's say for Barbados, we have very unique biodiversity. Some biodiversity or animals that you see here may not be found anywhere else in the world, maybe in the Caribbean, but perhaps not in other places. And maybe we do have what you call endemic species. These are species that, because of the islandness, as they call it, because we're an island, we are actually broken off from, you know, the continent. And therefore, we don't have like giraffes that can come across to Barbados and then go back. We don't have that land border. And so then you don't have the kind of gene flow, which means that you can have animals from other areas coming and mating with animals that we have here. And so all the animals on the island, they have to mate with each other. And that leads to restricted gene flow, as they call it. And that leads to the evolution of endemic species. So some birds, some plants, you would only find in Barbados, not found anywhere else in the Caribbean. And you see the same thing in Trinidad, Jamaica, right around. So that's really biodiversity. It includes bacteria, fungi, viruses, living our mammals, birds, you know, reptiles, everything, both in the sea and on land. So that's really what biodiversity is, part and parcel of, a very integral part of biosecurity, but it is not biosecurity.
Thank you very much for that. I know our listeners are probably here trying to work out, so what does all this have to do with fire and life safety? What we talk about on the show every Sunday, but I just want y'all to stay with me because we're getting there. So you would have recently launched some training and stuff with the fire service, and in terms of water resilience. So tell us about this water resilience. We know that for years we have been hearing that Barbados is a water scarce country. So just tell us a bit about this water resilience and its importance to countries like Barbados and also other countries in the Caribbean, because maybe we may not be the only country that may be going through water shortages or water scarcity right now. So just tell us a bit about our resilience and its importance to us here in Barbados.
Yes, well, thanks. I think water resilience is very important for small island developing states, much like Barbados. I think from all estimates, Barbados is now ranked as the 15th most water scarce country in the entire world.
Wow.
So that gives you the gravity of the situation. We have limited water resources. I think even on a global scale, like their percentages of the fresh water that's available to humans is limited. Even though we have a lot of water that makes up the earth, a lot of it is either in the sea, so it's seawater, or you have glaciers, or you have ice caps. So neither of those are accessible to us in Barbados. We don't have ice caps. We don't have glaciers. But we do have seawater, which we can desalinate. But desalination costs money. On average, it's about three times the cost of abstracting groundwater from the underground aquifers. So that's using brackish water. If you're talking about full strength seawater, you're talking about six times the amount of cost that you would do for groundwater abstraction. So you can do it, but it's very expensive. And I'm sure that not many people would really, you know, be too keen on paying more for water at this point in time, because, you know, we all want to keep as much of our finances in our hands to do what we deem acceptable. But the way how that now dovetails into biosecurity is that you have different climatic impacts. You have the wet side of climate change. You have flooding. You have storms. You have sea surge, storm surge from the sea. And then you have sea level rise. So these are all problematic for water infrastructure, also water quality. Then you have the dry side of climate change, which you have droughts. You have Sahara dust that comes from over in Africa. Right now, we're experiencing that at the moment. But you also have fires, which is a consequence of, you know, the absence of active precipitation and rainfall. Then the earth dries out, plants dry out. They become part of that risk, that welfare risk that is so prevalent across Barbados. And so what we have embarked on is to try to get different agencies in government to understand the interrelatedness and how these impacts will impact on them as an organization, but also on other organizations. For instance, how that's going to impact on the availability of water in Barbados, the integrity of the infrastructure of water, because you're going to have more risk as it relates to the breaks in pipes, because during the drought season, like what we're going into now, if you look across any pasture in Barbados, it will be brown. It will have large gaps in the soil. You will see big cracks open up. And that happens to on the underground portion of the ground as well, where pipes are buried. And when that happens, you get forces being exerted on the pipe that they wouldn't have during the wet season. And if these are also laid in areas where, you know, you have traffic, you have heavy duty vehicles moving, then the movement of the underground earth is going to be exacerbated. And that can also lead to, you know, put stress on the water infrastructure and then lead to breaks and leaks within the infrastructure. Now, as it relates to fire, when you have a lot of rainfall, you get more grass growing, you get more bush growing or vegetation, and that is okay. But from the time the dry season rolls around, the winds pick up, especially from February, March. So the evapotranspiration, or the rate at which plants lose water, increases, right? And then the plants then become dry and they become brown, and they're more at risk for persons if they do set fire, whether this is intentionally or non-intentionally.
Yeah,
or accidentally, then it can lead to the rapid movement of fire, because once the fire starts, then the wind just blows, and because the grass or the vegetation is so dry, then the fire spreads rapidly. And we then have to look at the integrated impacts of the fire with the smoke, and then people inhaling that smoke downwind of the fire. And we've noticed that within the last few weeks of March, that it was really problematic. It was really difficult for asthmatics, people with respiratory symptoms. The air quality was really, really poor. And so we are trying to work in such a way that we get different stakeholders together at the same table. So we learn together, we grow together, and we come up with solutions that are integrated, that brings the best out of all the organizations to come up with the best solution for the island. And right now we're working on a predictive welfare model. This is with Dr. Peter Shamey. This is with Dr. Isabella Giron, and also with Dr. Carl Payne and Dr. David Yawson over at CERMES. So this is a UWA-wide effort on campus that we're looking to use the expertise resident on campus to solve key problems that we have in society and that we can make it safer for all of us, not just only one agency, but for the entire island.
So leading from that, talk about your water resilience, you mentioned fires and stuff like that. But climate change has been a word, you know, a term that has been knocking around for a while. You know, it's nothing new to any of us, really. I think from the time I was at school, I was hearing about climate change, and I've left school a few years now.
It's true.
So tell me why the urgency in the, you know, for the research in terms of wildfires and climate change and water resilience at this particular time.
Great question. Thanks. I think that whilst we may have heard of climate change, the impacts, the visible, tangible impacts, and how they impact on us each individually, we're starting to get a more clear picture. Mm-hmm. We can look at Hurricane Tomas with these really freak storms, the frequency of them as well, you know, how often we'll get them. Then the severity of the hurricane systems, the tropical storms that we get as well. We start to see an increase in that. So whilst we may have known of it theoretically, I think in practice, we are now starting to become more aware of, oh, this can really, really impact on me. I'm not only here in the Caribbean, but we can see it even on our televisions when we turn on, or we go on our smartphones and we see, you know, within our social media feeds, we see flooding, New Zealand flooding, in New York, you know, all of these different places that you don't necessarily consider at risk. You just see the hazard just occurring. So it brings a certain sense of reality to the table. And so with respect to what we would want people to kind of understand is that, you know, climate change is a part of our life. We have to adapt. We have to, you know, try to see how we can reduce that impact, and so that we can live as comfortable or more comfortable than we would like. If we don't change, mm-hmm. then climate change is already changing. So whether we want to change or not, it's going to happen. The change for us is going to help us, right, at the end of the day. So it's what do you want to do? So in terms of water, we know that there is a drought that is coming. That's being predicted through the CIMH, which is doing excellent work in Barbados and across the Caribbean as well. 2024, which is next year, is predicted to be a really bad drought year. Wow. Right? We know that El Nino is on its way in here in Barbados and throughout the rest of the Caribbean. And El Nino is just one of the two systems which are part of the global climate system, where it's dependent on the sea surface temperature of the Pacific Ocean. And when that temperature is either high or low, you get El Nino or La Nina. Now, El Nino is associated with very dry weather, right? And also you can still get rainfall. So I don't want people to think that it's just going to be no rainfall at all. It's just the rainfall totals are going to be much more reduced than you would anticipate or normal. With La Nina, you get higher rainfall totals, right? And so you get more wet weather. And so the risk for flooding for these severe storms are also high. But we just had 3 years of La Nina. So this is from 2000 during the pandemic, 2021, 2022. And now we're into 2023, El Nino is now coming. So there's a different feel altogether. You can see outside is drier. You know it's coming on. But it also means that our rainy season is going to be less in terms of rainfall totals. So that has implications for BWA and us as consumers of water and users of water on the island. And for the fire service, it also has an impact because you use water to, you know, extinguish wildfires, but not only wildfires, but be this vehicular, maybe a vehicular fire, I'm not sure, but definitely residents and maybe even commercial buildings as well. Yes, so there's a cascading impact that just because it's a drought, it's not only a issue for the farmers, it's an issue for a lot of people, but we don't necessarily see it until we turn on the tap and recognize, oh, either the water pressure is low or there's no water, because I believe within Barbados, we've been kind of spoiled, to be honest. You know, in certain Caribbean countries, you can go and you can not even find a pipe water to turn on. You have to collect water on your roof, on the roof. So you have to have a rainwater tank. You have to chain that rainwater tank because you could go sleep and that could disappear. And you have no way of saving water. So we take a lot of things for granted. And water is expensive. It's a very expensive commodity. But we don't pay a lot for water, to be quite honest. If you go to New York in Brooklyn and you ask someone who lives in Brooklyn what their water bill looks like, they'll tell you maybe $500 a month. That is not what we pay. I can guarantee the average household does not pay $800 to $1,000 a month for water. So I'm not saying that, you know, water is supposed to be expensive. I'm just giving you a comparative view of it and how we should really treasure it. And also work along with all the stakeholders in the country to see how we can ride out this impending drought and the other climate impacts that come with it, because it's going to be drought this year, maybe next year, but then there'll be something else. But we have to be aware. We have to understand when these, you know, projections come out, how does this affect me in what I do at home and also in terms of my job? How does this impact? How can I adapt and change my behavior that I'm accustomed to help the situation? And I think that's why I think this program is so brilliant, because you have that voice out there that communicates with persons to let them know what is going on, and then, you know, how they can all rally together to help out.
So I heard you mention that La Nina was running from 2020 during the pandemic up to this point, basically. So would you say then that the two systems basically run on, say, like a 2-year, 3-year changeover, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. And that's one of the things, too, that we're trying to understand, particularly with respect to fires. Because when you look at the El Nino, La Nina scales, you have to look at longer time scales, 30 plus years, to really see how that is impacting. Because you want to see more than one El Nino event, and you're not going to see that in maybe even a 10-year cycle. You may at best get two of them, and it's two really a good, you know, sample size. So you need to have longer. But the intention of what we're doing is to at least start, because if you don't start, you would never have the foundation to build on that. And that's what we wanted to do. And we really thank the fire service for partnering with us, sharing the data. And I thank you to Officer Taylor for sharing that data. That was quite eye-opening, because there's one statistic that we did in the training with BWA. And I must thank the 5Cs, the Caribbean Community Climate Change Center, and also the Green Climate Fund for the funding that particular project and the BWA. That statistic of having over 520 fires in 1 month, that statistic always shocks everyone, because unless people see this and the gravity of what the situation was and what it potentially could be in the future too, if we don't manage it well, then I don't think they quite understand how bad it can get. I don't think they can understand how bad it can get. And that is why we advocated strongly that the fire service be part of it, and not only the fire service, but there are other government entities that we have requested to be part of the training from Tongan Country, because you have to look at land use management. A lot of the overgrown areas in Barbados are perhaps lands that were in agricultural production and that are laying, you know, rab. And they're probably waiting to be converted into residential, because there's a land policy in place where you have to wait a certain amount of time before you can transfer the land from agricultural production into residential. And during that time, no agricultural production is done. So you know, everything and everything grows on it. So we have to look at, so that's why I say it's not an issue that is the remit of only BWA or only the fire service. This is a real, very integrated problem. And you have to then find a very integrated solution to achieve what you want.
Okay, so what I think maybe my final question, because the time is just skipping away.
So we definitely have to
have you back for like a second part or part two of this conversation.
No problem at all.
Well, ask you finally is so what are some of the short and long term effects from your point of view of the bushfires that we have in Barbados? So we have it in three parts: on the environment, one; on water resources, two; and on people, thirdly. So short and long term effects of bushfires, on those three categories: environment, water resources, and of course people.
Well, I think great question. I think in the short term, environment, with these bushfires, you're going to actually reduce the soil stability. So by burning all of this vegetation, then you don't have plants that have root systems that can keep soil together. So if you do have, after the fire, you have rainfall events, then the soil is going to be loose. You're going to get more soil erosion as well. The soil also scorches the earth and actually increases the risk of flooding. It may seem quite weird, but that's exactly what happens in California, because when the soil is heated, at the temperatures at which you have some of these fires, then you get a change in terms of the soil not being absorbent like a sponge, but it actually repels the water and it runs off as though it's running on the surface of the road. And so downhill or at a lower elevation, the risk for flooding is increased. And as it relates to water resources, definitely the short-term impact is that fire service has to find water to battle these fires, right? To reduce the impact on or the risk for, you know, potential property damage or, you know, some other problem. And so the impact obviously is the increased demand, water demand, and particularly in a time when we know during the dry season, the levels, the reservoir levels are going to be low. And so the BWA is already trying to, you know, curtail or reduce the customer use of water or inappropriate use. And so therefore, you know, it causes a challenge because you have a conflict that might occur. Long-term, in terms of resources, and also short-term, the damage to infrastructure. If you see the same blue poly pipe running through some of these areas, this is water that's leading to some other area. And the heat of the fire can actually melt the plastic, pipe, and that can release potentially chemicals into the water that could be problematic for persons, because it may alter the taste, or you know, you may not even taste it. But these are things that can actually occur. And then, as it relates to people, the smoke is a real problem. 7 million people die every year, according to WHO, due to air pollution. One of those sources would actually be wildfires. And we know we have an NCD problem, non-communicable disease problem in Barbados. Heart attacks, strokes, hypertension, you know, cardiovascular disease, all of these are increased when you are inhaling and breathing in polluted air. So this is a problem that we definitely need to see how we can tackle. And then, you know, if there is the burning of the biomass, is going to release carbon dioxide into the air. So it's going to further exacerbate climate change. And so we want to be sure that we can manage it as effectively as possible. And not only the smoke, but you can even think about the ash after, because I actually experienced it myself. You know, around my home was burnt, an area around there. And even though it was burnt a couple of days before, it was still very noxious in terms of having the high winds, as I mentioned, during this period of time, because we do a lot of clay flying around Easter. Right. The wind is still kicking up a lot of that ash, and it's almost akin to when we had the volcanic ash. Even though the volcanic event occurred and the ash had settled, afterwards the wind would still be kicking up that ash and still causing respiratory distress for persons. So you can look at it, as you said, short term and also in your long term. And God forbid, if you've done your laundry and you put it out to dry and you get smoke, yeah, we all know what you have to do. You got to take it off, because no one wants to walk around with smoke in their clothes.
True,
and so
true.
You have to do another wash, which actually increases your water usage.
Water usage, correct. All right, so Dr. Douglas, I want to thank you. As usual, my 30 minutes have disappeared. So definitely, you know, we will have you back next week to conclude. We're going to look more at probably some solutions to some of these issues, because we looked at some of the implications in this week's show. So definitely more some solutions maybe next time when we have the chat. So thank you very much once again for joining us here. And I'm sure that everyone enjoyed the show today. So just want to thank everyone for tuning in. And as I always say, take care of yourselves and each other. So until next time, have a great day.
On the Barbados.